You know what feels good? Saving money on beer, food, and brewing supplies. And it's easy to do if you have the free Brew Guru app from our friends at the American Homebrewers Association. Get the Brew Guru app for your mobile device, and you'll have access to a searchable map of nearby deals. What's more, Brew Guru has content and recipes that'll help you make better beer. Download Brew Guru today and follow the path to good beer. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 24th, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we head back up to Ozark Beer Company in Rogers, Arkansas to check out their new home. We'll also talk details on their yogurt-soured Berliner Weiss, a beer based on a homebrew recipe from architect Buckminster Fuller. Be careful when you say that one. And sample a rare Ozark Bourbon Double Cream Stout from 2015. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing Bottle Opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can find me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first. Go to basicbrewing.com, click on the ad on the right-hand side of the page for Amazon. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate everybody who has done that for us. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows phone app. We're on BlackBerry Podcast Directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're on Google Play Music. And we're on the iHeartRadio app as well. And if you'd do us a favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, that'll help new listeners find us. And finally, if you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who's done so already. I figure everybody's sick of talking about the eclipse, but I'm going to anyway. It just was so amazing. My boys and I went up to Sullivan, Missouri to witness totality, and wow. There is just no way to adequately describe the experience. I made a short little video of us watching the eclipse from a family farm in Sullivan, and I posted it on my Active Voicing YouTube channel, so you can go to youtube.com/activevoicing to find that. Pretty dang cool. You know, you can see pictures, and you can hear people talking about it, but until the lights go out, and the cicadas start chirping and the bats start flying overhead and you're surrounded by 360 degrees of sunset, you just crazy. I'm looking forward to 2024 when we'll get to do it all again, I hope. Also happening this week, my wife and I celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary. So, wow. Even more amazing than the eclipse is that I found the woman in the world who's perfect for me and has the patience to put up with me. So cheers to us. I brewed a batch of beer with my son and his friend this past week. They're not old enough to drink, but they're old enough to be curious about the brewing process and the science behind it. And boy, it was a lot of fun spending time with them. And fielding questions that I'm fairly confident I had the right answers to. You know when they're paying attention, when they ask a question that just is right on the process, and you can tell that they're actually paying attention to what you're doing and having a lot of fun. And we brewed that batch on it's a 5-gallon Cascade Pale Ale recipe. On my electric brew-in-a-bag system from our sponsors, High Gravity and Tulsa. I think this beer is going to turn out really well. I'm very happy with my efficiency. In my figuring, you know, on the back of a piece of paper, I figured I was close to 80% efficiency. And in addition to the standard boil hops that we used, I chilled the wort down after the boil to around 170 degrees Fahrenheit or 77 C and added a couple ounces of Cascade for 15 minutes and held at that temperature. And I was able to use tap water to continue that chilling or to do the initial chilling and then to continue that chilling. But when we reached a plateau at around 90 degrees Fahrenheit or 32 C, I hooked up a pond pump and I plugged it into my Warthog EBC-130 electric brewery controller and circulated ice water through the immersion chiller to take it down the rest of the way. And the Warthog controller from High Gravity showed me with its LED display exactly where we were temperature-wise, so that was really handy. Sure beats keeping a sanitized thermometer nearby to keep checking the temperature like I used to do. High Gravity has a full line of turnkey electric brewery systems like mine and like Steve's, from 5 gallons all the way up to 2 barrels. And they also have a variety of electric brewery controllers to fit your needs. So you can check them all out at highgravitybrew.com and use the code EBC75BB to save $75 off your electric brewery gear. Take the pain out of propane at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Now, it was my great pleasure to go back up to Ozark Beer Company and talk to Andy Coates, co-founder, and his head brewer, Jesse Gagnon. We had a super informative and super fun conversation, in my opinion. And we talked about their Berliner Weiss, their Bucky Beer, and BDCS, their Bourbon Double Cream Stout. Yum. Andy Coates, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having us, James. I appreciate you guys coming by.
Who have we got with us, and where are we?
We're here in downtown Rogers at Ozark Beer Company, our new facility we moved to just this past April. And we're here with myself and our head brewer, Jesse Gagnon.
Jesse, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, James.
This is quite the place. It's beautiful. To get a picture of where you were was an unair-conditioned warehouse, correct?
Absolutely.
Which was pretty nice as far as a lot of space, but rustic, I guess. Describe this space and how it came about and a little of the history of the space and such as that.
Sure. Yeah, our old spot, like you mentioned, was a pretty rough-looking warehouse. It was the right price and the right setup for when we needed to start up, and we knew it wouldn't be a permanent home, and so when the time came to kind of explore other options, we knew we wanted to stay near downtown Rogers, and everyone had been so good to us around here that we looked pretty much every building within a mile of here that was 10,000 square feet or over and that was on the market. And we really couldn't find exactly what we wanted. We kept driving by this building that we're in now. And basically we approached the owner, and he was willing to accept an offer. And so we had the chance and hopped on it. So this building here was built in the 1890s. It was originally a flour mill. We're only the fourth owners, which is pretty neat. It was at one point was the longest owned family business in Rogers. The Kennan family had Rogers Moving and Transport for, I believe, 86 or 87 years.
Wow.
And so a lot of history in this building. It's made of longleaf pine, which is now extinct in Arkansas. Came from the Van Winkle Mill out toward War Eagle and whatnot. And so it's just really, really neat. We walked in and didn't want to do too much to it. And the bonus is that attached to this old flour mill is a 10,000 square foot warehouse, which is exactly pretty much what we needed for production. So,
well, it's great. And it's air conditioned, which
it is.
something that here lately you haven't needed as much. It's been a little cooler. But you've got a tasting room that is actually has 2 levels, so you're able to do some stuff here upstairs, I'm assuming, and have music and things like that you hadn't had before. So Jesse, how long have you been on board?
I'm going on 2.5 years, I think, right in that zone right there. So, yeah, closing in on 3 before too long.
Is Andy a hard taskmaster?
Oh, very, very. No, not at all. Not at all. Andy has a rare quality of doing whatever it takes to see things succeed, and I don't think you can really train people to do that in leadership positions. They either have it or they don't, so not at all. On the contrary.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Andy likes to lead by example, It may be hard to live up to his standards.
I would say it's much harder to live up to Jesse's organizational standards, frankly. So that's a really good thing for me to have around.
We all come together. Let's put it that way.
Well, there you go. And you've got your canning line out there, and you've just rolled out your IPA.
Yep. So that was in the plans for quite a while. We had that design finished up and just didn't have the capacity or really the time to do it. And so they rolled out to liquor stores last Wednesday, and it's been going really well. We're happy to have that going. So,
I bought my first six-pack a couple days ago, awesome. So congratulations.
Thank you.
You've been, in addition to the new space, you've been working on some fun projects. One thing that I wanted to talk to you about that I can't remember if we've talked in detail about the Berliner Weiss in the past or not.
I don't recall, frankly. yeah, pretty much we want to do do some experimentation, and we had never really messed with souring or kettle souring at all. And pretty close to after Jesse came on, he kind of spearheaded that project, and we decided to do it. So this is the third year?
Yeah, this is the third year. Fourth brew, third year.
So you've got, as we sample, you've got to get into the details. You know, you're talking to homebrewers out there who know what you're talking about. So don't be shy on the technical aspects of the whole thing.
Yeah. No, this was a really fun project for us. We did a lot of different research getting into it, and it's always nice when you can mix up your usual processes in a brew house, particularly on a professional scale. Everything's so. It's just laid out straight for you because the brew house really only works one way typically. So finding how to manipulate that to make a kettle sour beer was a lot of fun. So researching that and discovering what worked and what didn't was a lot of fun. So probably the most fun I've still had out there in the brew house was learning to brew a totally different style as far as fermentation is concerned.
Is it a little intimidating getting into the souring process?
It was. That was back when we weren't quite so busy, and we could afford more time. So now if we spend 24 hours letting something sour in the kettle, it better turn out. And back then we had more time. Andy and Lacey have always approached this with a really good mindset, and that's, you know, if the beer is not what we want, it's not going to go out the door. So that was... really, that's the only attitude to approach something like that with. Otherwise, you're gonna probably end up making some mediocre beer at some point. So that took a lot of the pressure off for us, I think, for Andy and I in the back of the house.
So talk about the recipe.
Yeah, so the recipe is super simple. Definitely kept the IBUs low to keep the lacto happy. Real simple. Some raw wheat, some regular white wheat. Pilsner malt, and just kept it real simple. We used acidulated in the mash tun to try to start to get that pH to drop. Naturally, if you use too much acidulated, you're not going to get your enzyme activity going. So we use about 6% in the initial mash, and then we add another 4% of the overall grain bill during the sparge. So we end up adding that acidulated malt, but it's not actually during the rest. So that we just try to get that pH as low as possible initially, including we dose the sparge water with some acid to bring that down. And pretty much we're just shooting for like 4.6, 4.7 before you pitch any sort of lactose strain is what we've been shooting for in the past. So,
and what's your source of the lacto?
So ours, this is a funny deal. When we were first messing around with this, a good friend of ours, somebody I used to work with, his name is Dave Soper. He's the head brewer and head of production up at Mother's Brewing Company in Springfield. He just happened to swing in. He just got back from CBC where they had an actual seminar on kettle souring with yogurt, and so we discussed this, and he just gave us a big head nod and a big thumbs up and let us know there was some legitimacy behind it. So so we ended up actually using some yogurt, which is what we've done ever since, and it worked out pretty well.
So how much how much yogurt do you need for what's the size of batch that you're working on?
Yeah, so we're going with a 15-barrel batch, and we've messed around with all different types. Of course, when you're dealing with lacto, you need to be a little more fluid and flexible, because it's not just like pitching, you know, regular Saccharomyces. So we've ended up upping that dose for different batches, but I think the least we've got away with is about 60 ounces of yogurt into 15 barrels with about a 19-hour rest for it to actually do its thing.
It does, 60 ounces. It doesn't sound like a lot.
No, it's you know, four or five of the normal size yogurt containers you get from the grocery store. Basically, we went to Harps and grabbed ours right there. Last year, we tried really fancy, expensive, super organic, etc. yogurt from Whole Foods. And it frankly didn't work at all. And we ended up going to Harps and grabbing the stuff.
And that's when we dosed it, yeah.
But yeah, other stuff to just process-wise. Our brew house is from 96. There's no bells and whistles on it. It's not really set up to do anything really controlled. So to kind of help that process, we covered our kettle stack with a garbage bag and duct taped that to prevent oxygen, obviously to trap some heat. And then we also used CO2, so cracked open our doors on the kettle and kept dosing CO2 on there to help keep that oxygen level down and obviously inhibit oxygen happy bacteria.
So. And if you have guys who haven't kettle soured before, it's definitely important to do like a cleaning and a good CIP, what we'd consider a CIP beforehand, and we even ran a sanitizer on the kettle just to eliminate any sort of bacteria that could be in there so that all you have vying for that wort is your actual lacto, whatever you pitch.
So do you do the boil beforehand before the souring, or do you do like a pasteurization step, or what? How does that work?
We've played around with a couple different things. The last 2 years, what we've done is we've brought that, as we're running off, we bring that temp up to about 180, and then we actually have our heat exchanger sanitized and cleaned just like we would for a regular knockout into the cellar, and we use it to cool our wort down pretty much to when we hit 120 degrees, because that lacto wants to be between like 103 and 120, so right in there. And our kettle's really well insulated. Like Andy said, we seal it off as best we can, and it actually holds that temp extremely well. Typically it doesn't get below 110 degrees in, you know, the day and a half that it sits in there. So yeah, we just let it come down to 120, and then if it wants to free fall over the next day a little bit below that, we know it's still in a safe zone for the bacteria. So.
And what's your target pH?
pH, we'd like it to be as low as 3.3. This year it was as high as 3.6, but in the past we've definitely got it down lower.
And that's because you want the yeast to be happy when you do the actual fermentation?
Yeah, the yeast aren't loving this beer, I imagine. When they finally get to it, they're wondering what's gone on.
Trying to kill us or what?
Exactly. The yogurt tends to love it. And it definitely gets the best part of it. So, you can actually tell. I mean, the pH scale being logarithmic, you can actually tell the difference, you know, between some of these final pHs in the finished product. Mm. So this one was about 3.6 is what you're drinking now.
Well, I would describe it as compared to what's the baseline today of sour beers, it's lightly tart.
Yes, that baseline's getting higher.
Or lower.
Lower on the pH scale.
Absolutely. No, so this beer comes in just over 3%, 3.3. I believe it's 5 IBUs is what we calculate. It could be a little bit less. As you're doing, you know, homebrewing, obviously it's small batches and whatnot. For us on a 15-barrel scale, adding just a few ounces of hops seems really funny. And so we always kind of question, is this the right amount, and redo some calculations. But obviously we try to make it in the summer. That helps with our holding that heat temperature overnight, as well as a really refreshing, you know, beer that you can have in July and August in Arkansas. So
it's not the most refreshing beer in December.
Now, do you have syrups available downstairs for those who want to have it? What did the Germans say? The Mitschusch, or what do they say?
Yeah, we have the Woodruff syrup. So we approached a local producer, PH Alchemy, during our first year, and we were having trouble sourcing authentic Woodruff. And so basically they tracked some down and made a syrup for us. and that they've made ever since. So it's a nice herbal, obviously a little bit of sweetness, cuts that tartness, and it just, it goes pretty well. I prefer it plain personally, but that's, I prefer most things plain.
Now, what's the percentage, what's the breakdown of people who like it straight and who like it with the syrups?
I'd really say it's about half and half. We've tried other syrups in the past, and we have some, you know, more fruit-forward ones. We had a berry one last year that used some blackberries and raspberries and whatnot, and that goes really well. I think it really just comes down to personal preference. It's kind of like hot sauce. You either like a bunch or you don't, and so about half and half.
I like it plain myself. It's just nice and delicate and refreshing and it's just a wonderful thing by itself. And I, you know, to me, it's kind of like putting barbecue sauce on perfectly smoked ribs. You know, it's just like, ooh, what are you doing?
leave it alone. Huh?
Yep, no doubt.
So that's awesome. Now, do you want to, I hate to put my, I brought my weird SCOBY sour
I'd love to try it.
Beer.
Let's try it, absolutely.
Should we try it now? Absolutely. And then we can drink lots of water and forget all about it.
Nonsense.
Jesse, I'll let you pour. It's a weird beer. It is 100% rye. It's a 2-gallon batch. I used 2 pounds of malted rye. And the beginning gravity was like 10.18. And the finishing gravity, I wish I'd brought my book, was around 10.10. So it's only like 1%.
Wow.
It's I soured it with the SCOBY, the mother, from a kombucha. Okay. And after 3 days, it got down to 3.2. I was shooting for 3.4, but it overshot a little bit. And in this batch, the sourness was pretty clean. I mean, my first batch that I did a kettle souring, I just used the grain, you know, just 2-row, and I got like dumpster and diaper and things like, like that. But this was pretty clean. So then I pasteurized it at 180 degrees for 15 minutes, and during that time I added 2 ounces of Cascade, okay, and that 2 gallons, and then I fermented with USO5.
Did you end up boiling it, or was it just the pasteurization?
No boiling, just the pasteurization, which is why it's still cloudy.
Yes.
I've done 100% rye beers that were clear, but I did a boil. So.
And we've done a lot of research just in terms of, I guess, general reading and talking to other brewers about in some of your kettle souring or a Berliner Weiss style, to boil or not to boil. And it seems to come down that there are a lot of guys on both sides of the tracks.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people doing a like small flash boil, which is sort of the approach we take. It's always the question that nobody seems to answer is like, how do you drive off DMS with a 10-minute boil? You know, it's like it seems counterintuitive, but it's also very traditional. And it seems like people are going both ways and making excellent beer. So
I want your honest opinions. I mean, leave your professional hats on, and you're not going to hurt my feelings because I know it's a weird experimental beer, but. What are your impressions, or what's your feedback?
It may be a terrible word, but it's really interesting. The nose on it, like,
this is a terrible word.
I've never tasted anything like this.
The nose, you can definitely smell some of the acidity in terms of just the brightness of it. Like you said, it has that cloudy appearance, but some nice foam.
I get some nice pineapple notes on the nose.
That's the Cascade, I'm assuming.
I'd say that carries over to the flavor as well. It has some nice tartness, but there's nothing, you know, mouth-stripping about this in terms of just taking the enamel off your teeth.
No, yeah. No, it's very drinkable. How long did the SCOBY take to actually drop that pH down to, you said, 3.1?
About 3.2. Took about 3 days.
Okay. All right. No, that's impressive. My wife makes kombucha, and it would take a lot of SCOBY to get a 15-barrel batch moving, yeah. I think.
Well, there's a cautionary tale, because we went camping a couple weekends ago, and I came back to a broken bottle, which I never have bottle bombs, and had a broken bottle. So going through my head is, you know, what's going on? Is the pasteurization step not enough to kill those SCOBY bugs? You know, should I just have gone up to a regular boil and made sure everything was dead? Or was the fermentation not complete from the regular yeast because of the low pH and I just bottled too early, or I also did a dry hopping with some Chinook. I forgot to tell you that. So maybe the little Mr. Beer fermenter that I had also did some dry hopping of a kombucha in, maybe I didn't clean all that stuff out. And, you know, so there's all kinds of things, all kinds of questions in my mind about why did I get a bottle bomb.
Sure. I'd say Chinook's one of our favorites as a side note, and that's that's tasty, very honestly.
Almost a juniper character, it feels like, As far as the bottle bomb, I'd say you're sounding more and more like a professional brewer, where you have more questions than answers. You just have less than 20 grand on the line, I assume.
Yeah, 2 gallons with 2 pounds of rye is not too much. Well, and to add to the confusion, so I did two tests. I started another. I tried to duplicate the kettle souring batch the same way, put another SCOBY in it. And then I also brewed a pale ale to put in the Mr. Beer fermenter to see if it soured or got nasty in any way. Well, the batch that I tried to kettle sour with the SCOBY, it started this active fermentation almost immediately, and it after 5 days it only got down to 4.2. So I don't know. So I definitely wouldn't try it on your professional system until, you know, you run some little pilot batches. But, you know, who knows what's in those SCOBYs? You know, it's a symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast, and you don't know what's in there. So,
and really, we run into the same thing with the kettle souring. It's a lot of people, if they have a kettle soured beer in their regular regimen, they're typically no longer kettle souring. They're doing it just like that, except they're using a different vessel like they would the kettle, and that allows them the opportunity to keep brewing, whereas when we're doing a kettle sour beer, it ties up the brew house for 2 to 3 days, and that's just not very affordable on some level.
No, it's a lot of work, just in terms of the attention to it. You know, we usually brew it on a Friday, let it sit, and come in on Saturday to finish it. This year, with the pH wasn't dropping, so we actually let it carry over to Sunday, and finished it Sunday night. So it was definitely a couple-day beer. So it's some attention, and usually on the weekends, none of us really want to be here. So it's we usually do it once, maybe twice a year.
It's like in that amount of time, you could have 90 barrels of IPA or 15 barrels of this. So,
well, I appreciate you're doing it because it's a lovely beer. And going back from mine's kind of like a sledgehammer with the hops and the.
I think you're being too hard on yourself. This is very drinkable.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you very much. I may never be able to duplicate it, but there it is. I feel a bit relieved. You've partnered with the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art recently on a very interesting project. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Crystal Bridges, they've acquired a piece called the Fly's Eye Dome. A gentleman named Buckminster Fuller, who was born in the early 1900s and passed away, I believe, in 83, out in California. He was very forward-thinking in many, many ways. One of his core philosophies was efficiency, as well as he thought that if I could bring people housing in an affordable way and get them that shelter, that could help change the world and kind of cascade other effects. So he obviously had many, many ideas about many, many things, got into architecture, design, engineering, and I'd say he's one of the most interesting people that I've learned about and had never heard of before 6 months ago. So they acquired the Fly's Eye Dome, and with that, they also acquired his journal as part of an archive. And so as they were going through this, they came across a couple pages that someone recognized maybe as beer notation. So there are a couple homebrewers who worked at Crystal Bridges, and they confirmed, yep, these are beer notes. And so we have a small connection to Crystal Bridges through a couple people that we know. And they approached us just to say, hey, take a look at these pages. What do you think? So they blew them up for us, printed them off. We were able to check them out. And more or less, it was a bunch of calculations of sugar and alcohol and different things in terms of there wasn't a full recipe. So we kind of took that idea, and for the release of the Fly's Eye Dome, which is actually happening Saturday at Crystal Bridges, the new installation's opening up, they are basically, they wanted to help do kind of something special. So they approached us to maybe come up with a beer that would complement this project. So Jesse was a pretty integral part of that, and I'll kind of let him, he actually was part of the presentation, but that's kind of the background of how Crystal Bridges came to partner with us. So is it about a four-month process, kind of from start to finish, of getting the concept down and figuring out what we were going to do, and then finally executing the beer?
Yeah, we were actually in our old building when Crystal Bridges first came to us, and we had so much going on that it was just sort of daunting to think about partnering with somebody, particularly a world-renowned art museum that just happens to be next door. And this turned into a really fascinating project. It was so unique in the sense that, you know, most collaborations are brewer to brewer or brewery to brewery. And what you're seeing a lot now, which I don't know if a lot of your audience is picking up on it or not, but a lot of the collaborations you see out there are actually very minimal. We've seen them where basically somebody flies in a brewer and there's already a recipe prepared and they sit there and drink while the automated system brews this quote-unquote collaboration. It's more of a media marketing campaign, and that's just not our style. And so this actually fit our niche, and we enjoyed doing it. The challenge was, how do you commemorate such a unique character with a beverage? You know, when you, it would be hard to sum up his life in an 8-hour presentation, let alone if you're drinking a beer. And so we were sort of forced to put our heads together in production and with the Crystal Bridges people and just come up with some core concepts that were true of how he viewed the world and his interests, and we tried to integrate those into the beer as best we could. So
how would you describe the style, quote unquote?
We were really going for more of an like a California pale ale of the 1980s with more of a modern twist on it. And to give you some background, Andy already gave you some great background on Bucky Fuller, as we call him affectionately. He had a few core theories, and like Andy said, he was fascinated with efficiency, and particularly efficiency of weight. He had this theory that you could weigh your house, and he could tell you whether or not it was efficient based on its weight, or any building for that matter. He had this strong correlation between the two. So we made this a small ABV beer. He also absolutely believed that to do more, you need to use less. And so we sort of took that less is more approach, and it's a very simple grain bill. There was some notes about crystal malt in his recipes, and we ended up using a little bit of crystal just to pay his actual recipe tribute. And then Andy had this wonderful idea to use some of the new cryogenic hops coming out of the Pacific Northwest, because it was right up Fuller's alley. In the same way he used fiberglass to do some of his architectural breakthroughs, we sort of decided to use cryo hops. So yeah, Andy had that idea, and we ordered some, and that was our first time using cryo hops, and it's been really interesting. So,
yeah. So this beer is straight Citra all the way through. With Citra pellets, traditional pellets throughout the boil, and then the cryo hops were used during the whirlpool, and then as a small dry hop. So for those of you who don't know, cryo hops, it's a brand coming out of YCH Hop Union that they're calling Lupulin 2. So basically, they're nitrogen-rich environment. They're cryo-extracting the actual lupulin glands and kicking out the leaf matter, basically, and then concentrating that into a powder or into a pellet. So it's a pretty interesting thing. We obviously didn't know much about it. They just came out, I believe, in February or March of this year. I believe they're becoming more widespread. I'm not sure if they're in homebrew stores yet, but they're pretty neat.
They are. Yeah, they're really unique. Like Andy said, they just condense everything in the lupulin gland for you, so it's like super hops. They don't even give you an alpha acid, because really you're not going to use them for bittering, because it's more off the charts. Yeah, it seems like they recommend them for more late addition. There's a lot of essential oils in there, but they were, everything we could find made it sound like the alpha acid content was in the low 20s. So you want to be careful with them, is what we is what we deduced from that.
Yeah, during the brewing process, and we did some calculations and weighed out hops, and then we removed some, and then removed some more. So the final Whirlpool edition was about a quarter of what we had first thought we'd use.
Your homebrewers know the feeling of when you're about to dump something in a pan of wort, and you second-guess yourself and cut that ingredient in half. That happened about three times during this beer.
Well, it's delicious. First of all, the malt backbone is nice and substantial. It's almost chewy. I guess compared to what we've been drinking, right. You know, the lower gravity beers. But the hop presence is really interesting. I don't want to say dank, but it's almost like a raw.
It's pungent.
It's almost like a raw hop character. Is that unfair or is that? I like it.
No, I think it has a lot of the natural citra character that you normally get from citra hops, but it also, for lack of a better term, it's a bit sweaty. I don't know. It's
we like it.
Yeah, it's the nice kind of sweaty.
Right.
I could drink a bunch of that.
So we use a little bit of Vienna malt that we've grown really fond of, called Gold Pills, that Brees is doing, and it's just like a golden Pilsen malt, I guess. We really enjoy it, and it's been a backbone for several of our side projects, and this was one where we thought we'd employ that, and so it definitely gives it a good malt backbone without going overboard.
Now, you poured it from a bottle, an unlabeled bottle. Is this going to be distributed, or is it just here, or just at the museum?
Right,
or?
So
another one of Andy's ideas.
Yeah. So these 750s, we filled. There was an event over at Crystal Bridges where Jesse and another one of our guys, Marty, spoke about this project along with two people from Crystal Bridges as kind of the presentation about Buckminster Fuller and the Fly's Eye Dome. And so for that event and that evening, we hand-bottled about 107 or 10 750s to take there, and then obviously a couple for ourselves. So we pulled this one out of the cooler. Exactly. Which is pretty fun. So it's available now at Crystal Bridges at 11 at their restaurant, and I believe once the outdoor, you can't quote me on this, but the outdoor exhibit opens, that it'll be available there as well. They have a food truck out there in the woods. It's also available here at the brewery, and that's the only places it is. It won't be out for distribution.
Very cool. Well, I've been to the museum three times now to see the Chihuly glass exhibit, and taking friends and family and walking around in the woods. Very cool. And you can see the eye dome thing, you know, kind of off in the distance. It's off limits now, but the geodesic domes is what I think of when I think of Buckminster Fuller, and I think that they named a nanoparticle after him because it almost looked
they
like
did.
They called him Buckyballs. So,
if all of you don't know about him, I'd get on Google and check him out. It's pretty awesome. So the fiberglass, the Fly's Eye Dome is made of fiberglass, and he actually, you know, back in the 80s when he built these, approached a surfboard designer and builder because he was that cutting edge. No one knew how to do what he wanted to do, and just he was one of those that seemed very relentless about his task.
The amount of patents he holds are pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And I know Crystal Bridges is really excited because their actual museum designer did one of his first major works right across the street from one of the big domes that Bucky was building at the time. So there was this strange connection for Crystal Bridges there too. So, yeah, if your listeners get a chance, they should absolutely go out there, or at least come by the tap room and drink a few pints of it here.
No doubt.
You can't come to Northwest Arkansas without going to Crystal Bridges. So here's to Buckminster
Cheers.
Fuller.
Cheers.
And to you guys. Cheers. That's tasty. Now, there's another unlabeled vessel over there. Andy, what do you got there?
So Jesse and I this morning, when we talked about you coming by this afternoon, we naturally, early in the morning, thought about, well, of course we need to drink some bourbon double cream stout. So this is a 2015 can. This is our original batch.
Oh, my. Wow. Now, this is a beer that has gained a cult following, and people line up around the block on release day, right?
It's pretty fun.
Fresh glass?
Sure. You want to, let's see. Here, rinse mine. I've got more of that at home.
we've been definitely very fortunate to have some great folks around here who took our beer and sent it around the country our first year, and it kind of grew from there. So I think barrels and barrel aging is one of those things that we all really enjoy. It's a lot more work in general, much like the Berliner Weiss, that usually the rewards are reaped after a bunch of trials and errors. the barrel work is one of those things that at my second job when I worked in Chicago, basically I learned a lot there and kind of, I guess, developed a passion for it myself. Where I like barrel-aged beers a lot. And this Bourbon Noble Cream Stout, like I said, it kind of took off more or less by accident. Our production's pretty limited. Last year we filled 22 bourbon barrels, which are 53 gallons apiece. We filled our first set of barrels about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, and we brewed our second batch. It's in the fermenter right now, and we're going to do another one in a week or two. So this is one of those beers that's loosely based off our traditional cream stout recipe, an imperial version with a few recipe changes just to get that ABV up. And the 15, I haven't had one in a while, and there's not much left. So
this is the 15?
The 15.
This is an honor, guys. Thank you very much. Oh, wow. That smells so good. I feel like just sitting here and smelling it for like 15 minutes. Wow. So while I do that, talk about the recipe. Who wants to talk about how this beer comes together?
Andy wrote the recipe.
Yeah, so this it's an amalgamation of a lot of malts, and not so much by design, but just by accident, I think. A lot of times, like Jesse talked about earlier, simplicity is one of our core focuses, where we don't try to do 7, 8, 9, 10 malts or even 5 a lot of the time. This is basically pale or 2-row. There's some caramel 120, some dark chocolate. We use a midnight wheat, a toasted wheat from Breeze, to give some color and some body with some delicate flavor. There's obviously some roasted barley. Then we use lactose. There's some Munich in the base malt. So it's really, I don't know. It's a pretty neat beer. It's pretty high IBUs. It's just over 70.
Wow.
So before it hits the barrel, frankly, it doesn't taste that great. So we're basically preparing the wort to sit and age and kind of stand up to the bigger flavors that the bourbon barrels bring.
Even month 4, it doesn't taste that great.
No, it doesn't.
About month 6, we start enjoying it. Yeah.
Hmm. Wow. Super chocolatey. I would almost swear there's coconut in there. The vanilla probably is coming from the barrel.
Mm-hmm. The coconut.
Yeah. There's bourbon in there as well. It smells pretty boozy, but the flavor is not. It's not hot at all, in my opinion.
And I think that lactose addition that we do, you know, making it a milk or a cream stout, I think helps cut that edge. One of the biggest things that Jesse and I talk about very often, along with Brant, our other brewer and director of quality, is the body of barrel-aged beers. Some beers you get, just because it's in a barrel doesn't mean it's good. You get a lot of tannin extract, and it's just harsh and not what you want. Or they're really thin, and it's just not something, you know, you need that body to be there. And so I think that lactose really helps that, frankly.
I had a friend at Mother's who used to say, you can't barrel age your sins away. And I'm thinking about getting it tattooed on somewhere. I don't know.
That's absolutely true.
That's a good point. I mean, I have had barrel aged beers that tasted like, you know, I was chewing on a table leg.
Yep.
You've got to obviously treat the barrel as it is a flavor ingredient in the recipe. How do you treat the barrels? Where do they come from? And, you know, how do you prepare them for the beer?
So all our barrels traditionally come from Heaven Hill out of Kentucky. We have a barrel broker that we use that gets them to us fresh. Usually they're dumped within a week or two of when they hit the building, which is really, really nice for us to have a steady stream that we can count on where they're not sitting in a warehouse. At one point, we did get a few barrels from another broker out of Colorado, and they frankly weren't as good. They were pretty dry. We actually didn't use a fair number of them just because of the harshness that we experienced. So having that consistent barrel is a big part of barrel-aged beers, I guess. You know, finding that consistent.
2016, I think it was roughly like 40% of what we had in barrels we didn't end up using because it was from... It was from these barrels that when we got them, we opened them up, and they were bone dry, which was definitely a sign they'd been sitting in the mountains somewhere. And when they're that dry, it seems like they just suck up the beer so quickly and then just impart a real tannic harshness that you can't really blend out very easily. And so that was another great instance where quality won over quantity, which makes my job a lot easier here with Andy and Lacey feeling that way.
It's got to break your heart, though, to dump something like this. Or
it's easy to burn a table leg. Let's put it that way.
No doubt.
Now, do the barrels? Is there still enough bourbon inside to pour out or do you leave that in there? Or
it's honestly kind of evolved. When I worked in Chicago, we were able to dump barrels over, and you know, you'd get half of a beer pitcher full of just charred whiskey, barrel strength, and we'd put it through a coffee filter and take it home. These days, the distilleries have gotten better. Obviously, there's a lot of money to be left on the table if you're not getting every drop. So they're actually rinsing barrels using vacuums. So they're still coming. They're moist. I wouldn't call them wet anymore like they used to be a few years ago.
It's really good when you get them in, you can pop the bung and see your eye looking back up at you from the bottom because you know there's something in there. And
right.
So it becomes a trade-off for us is do we want a pint of cask-proof whiskey or do we want this beer to taste that much better in 6 months? So we tend to leave it in these days.
Absolutely.
So what's the ABV?
This is just over 10%. Hits the barrel just over 9, and we're gaining a percent to a percent and a half. This year, the ones we're brewing right now, we're actually trying to get a higher Play-Doh. We think that'll help the body, the flavor, and the overall aging process. So this one will be higher, the 2018 release.
Mm. That's just amazing.
That's a nice beer.
I'd be happy if I brewed that. I think I'd quit if I brewed that.
What are you doing next week? We could use a guy on the mash paddle.
Yeah.
It's a fun time.
Yeah, well, our brew house doesn't have any automation, so when you're stirring 850 pounds of grain, you're doing it with a paddle. And
we do two of those turns to make 15 barrels. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So how has it changed over the years?
Recipe wise, we haven't changed a thing.
But I mean, this particular beer coming from this can. Do you have tasting notes, or do you remember how it tasted when it was fresh?
I think what you mentioned, the vanilla comes more forward. The bourbon, I guess, the bourbon harshness that hotness that can be there in some bourbon beers, this one I don't think has it at all. I used to, my wife Lacey, who's our business manager, she aptly described this as a bourbon-soaked brownie. And I think that's more evident here as the bigger flavors soften and some of the oxidation just naturally produces some more fruitiness. At least in the 15, I like this beer fresh. I like it a year or two in a lot more, personally. My guess is this same can, though, 8 months from now would not be as good. I think it's peaking out. It's why there's not very many cans left, and I think we used our last keg when we did our release this last year in 2017. So you can actually overage beers, as a lot of people know. There's a lot of people's cellars that have way too much old beer, and that's a shame. So we try to drink it and appreciate it and not hold on to it too long. So
word to the wise, if you've got some of this beer of this vintage in your cellar, drink it now. Do you think that bitterness has come down over time? Have the IBUs settled out?
I'm really not sure. I frankly haven't drank enough of it consistently. We should institute a program of drinking one of these once a month, at least, and then track
We're pretty, I think professional brewers are more just worn out. I don't know a better way to put it.
Yeah.
When you get people lining up to buy a beer, chances are the people making that beer are really tired. And are going to drink less of it than
that
you
throughout
365 days.
A very correct assessment. I probably drink, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 bourbon double cream stouts a year, and they're usually with other people, which is frankly the way it should be.
So. Andy and I were talking about this yesterday or the day before, and just how, we'll keep one in the fridge cold if we want to share it with somebody, but other than that, we'll give it away to people who are big fans of it. It's sort of like giving birth to a rock star. It's cool, and then you're like, oh, there's an amplifier going off at 1 a.m. upstairs, and that's sort of how this beer feels sometimes. Like, you're like, okay, that's great, but we'd love to be able to just sell it to everybody who wants it.
Well, and also, you don't want to get used to it. I mean, you know, it's like these wow beers. You don't want to drink them every day because it'd be like you know, you just reset your palate and you'd get used to them and you don't appreciate them anymore.
Yep.
Or at least that's my theory. But wonderful stuff. Well, it's been a while since we gotten together, and I'm glad we've found the reason to do so again. And I look forward to the next period of time and watching what you guys are doing. Congratulations on your continuing success.
Well, thank you very much, James. You're always welcome here.
Hopefully it won't be another building.
It'll be, yeah. It'll be in this
no. Thank you very much.
We're not moving again.
Well, thanks again to Andy and Jesse. What a great conversation. Ozark brews some delicious beer, and they're good folks, too, which is handy. And they were very kind to say nice things about my weird little beer. What a lot of fun. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcast. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbooks where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. And thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Schwinn 170 Upright Bike and Incredible Wild Edibles. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.